This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Good morning. Happy Saturday, folks. Hope you're having a fabulous weekend so far. White Sox started things out right last night here at Wright Field. Friday nights at Wright Field, I was noting this yesterday in the postgame show, they've been just electric. I mean, it's unbelievable how good the White Sox have played on Friday nights. And the reason it stuck in my head, not just because of how well the games are, but I've just noticed every time they're having these great, great evenings, they're in their City Connects. And so that's why it's just, you know, stood out to me, and I had to go back and take a look. And the last four Friday nights, the White Sox have won and just played fantastic baseball. And if you missed it last night, what a night. Packed house, seventh sellout of the season here at Wright Field, Mexican Heritage Night, always one of the more popular theme nights. And Munetaka Murakami's return from the injured list after that right hamstring strain that he suffered actually 6 weeks to the day, returned to the lineup, and we were informed as the game was beginning that Munetaka Murakami had been informed early in the day that he was going to be a member of the American League All-Star roster. In fact, let's start there, because Munetaka Murakami actually got the news prior to the game. We found out on the board here at Wright Field, right as the game was starting, that Munetaka Murakami indeed was going to replace Byron Buxton on the American League All-Star team. And we also found out that Munetaka Murakami accepted the invitation to participate in Monday night's Home Run Derby. So it was already a festive atmosphere here at the park with the Murakami return. And then you add in that news, and it was no doubt, just you could feel it in the air. And so this is what it sounded like inside the White Sox clubhouse before last night's game, when Munetaka Murakami was informed by Will Venable, who passed the baton to Mike Vassell to make the presentation to Murakami that he was an All-Star.
Home run derby に出場するっていうところの決めて、理由などはいかがでしょうか。
オファーをいただいて、
It was more or less I was injured, so I already got the offer, and if my injury was recovering enough, I would love to participate, and there's no chance I would be declining that, and it was always, you know, one
so
of my...
That's actually Munetaka Murakami responding after the game, but I wanted to play for you guys here what it sounded like when he got the news inside the clubhouse that he was going to be a member of the American League All-Star team. Maybe we don't. Maybe we'll hang tight on that. Don't worry about it, Aiden. We'll get that later in the show. But let's. So obviously, though, it was a pretty cool evening just to start the game, to have Murakami back on the White Sox roster. And then before you knew it, the White Sox offense came to life, folks, because certainly it was a rough series prior to this game last night. The White Sox were swept by the Boston Red Sox. First time that the White Sox have lost a series at home in 11 tries, because the White Sox were on a run of 10 straight series wins. That was a franchise record for the White Sox before the Red Sox came to town and silenced their bats. But the White Sox certainly came to life last night with the Athletics in town, and things started out in the bottom of the third, not with a run-scoring play, but finally, an extra base hits, which is something that Tristan Peters did quite a bit last night.
The 3-2. Hit on the ground to first. Off the glove of Meneses. It'll kick into right. Benintendi's going to score. It's 2-0. That was a one-hop screamer that Meneses just could not handle. I'm guessing it'll be a base hit, and they've got a 2-0 lead and still nobody out.
So Munetaka Murakami, so there, Peters' double, you'll know why in a moment if you don't already, but Peters' doubles, finally an extra base hit for the White Sox after they failed to have an extra base hit all series long against the Red Sox, the only team in baseball to do that this year. Obviously, it was a struggle. So it was nice to see the White Sox finally pick up an extra base hit. Munetaka Murakami back in the lineup, also back on the field making some nice defensive plays.
And it's lined and caught! Murakami with a nice grab. He picked that one right before it hit the dirt, moving to his left toward the foul line. That would have been extra bases for Butler.
So the White Sox were playing some good defense. Sean Burke was cruising too, by the way. Didn't get as much attention from some because of what played out last night, but Sean Burke was certainly pitching extremely well, dominating. He actually went 7 innings, struck out 9 last night, only allowed 1 earned run. And we moved to the bottom of the 5th when Andrew Benintendi finally gave the White Sox a lead and put him on the board.
Line, base hit, left field corner. Multiple runs will score. Vargas, Montgomery. Here comes Mydroth. He has cleared the bases. A 3-run double for Benintendi, and it's 11-1.
We got a little out of sorts there. That obviously was Benintendi later in the game. But let's move to highlight three, Aiden, when Tristan Peters comes through. So Benintendi came up with an RBI double in the bottom of the 5th to make it 1-0. Tristan Peters then would come through with a single in the bottom of the 5th.
The 3-2. Hit on the ground at first. Off the glove of Meneses. It'll kick into right. Benintendi's going to score. It's 2-0. That was a one-hop screamer that Meneses just could not handle. I'm guessing it'll be a base hit, and they've got a 2-0 lead and still nobody out.
What was nice was that the White Sox offense did not quit. They came through with a big inning, Sam Antonacci adding on more in the 5th.
Teal close, swinging a line drive, base hit right field. Teal's going to be sent around third. Here comes the throw, going to be a play at the plate. He's safe. Jonah Heim looked like he might have had a play, but he never turned around to tag Teal. So 3-0.
White Sox would add a sack fly by Miguel Vargas to make it 4-0 in the 5th. Then Tyler Soderstrom in the top of the 7th would get Sean Burke for a solo home run, the only run that Sean Burke would allow. Again, a really fantastic outing by the man who has been the White Sox best pitcher here as of late. And at that point, 4-1, so comfortable, but certainly the White Sox were looking to add on a little bit more. Tristan Peters in the bottom of the 7th, already with a double and a single.
Peters hits a high deep drive out into right center field, way back there. She's going to go. A 2-run homer, Tristan Peters. It's 6-1.
Munetaka Murakami also coming through with his lone hit of the evening.
The pitch. Murakami hits a ground ball, past the bag at first, into the corner and right. Antonacci to third. He's coming home, and the relay will not be made. Murakami with an RBI double. It's 7-1.
That actually started the doubles party in the 7th, which Miguel Vargas immediately joined.
The pitch, that one lined, and it'll get to the wall. In fact, it's going to sit right at the base of the wall and left. Murakami's going to score. It's another double. It's 8-1.
The White Sox would go on to load the bases, setting up Andrew Benintendi for one more double.
Line, base hit, left field corner. Multiple runs will score. Vargas, Montgomery, here comes Mydroth. He has cleared the bases. A 3-run double for Benintendi, and it's 11-1.
11-1 at that point with not much in doubt. In fact, the only thing that was in doubt was, would Tristan Peters complete his cycle after already having a double, a single, and a home run earlier in the inning? And something that actually Len Casper noted on the broadcast last night, it's always amusing because a lot of times you will get an alert from MLB, or at least you used to be able to if you were following along. Hey, triple away from the cycle, which is always the hardest thing to come by in baseball, of course. So Tristan Peters comes to the dish in the bottom of the seventh for the second time after already homering in the inning, a triple shy of the cycle.
Pitches. Swinging a ground ball. Fair. Right field corner. Benintendi scores. Peters on his way to third. Here's the throw. Safe. He's hit for the cycle. Can you believe it?
Have a night, Tristan Peters. So with the home run and the triple in the seventh to complete the cycle, Peters became the third player in at least the expansion era since 1961 to get the two hits needed to finish a cycle in the same inning, joining Felix Pie, who did it in 2009, and Jim Ray Hart, who did it in 1970. So Tristan Peters, that's courtesy of Sarah Langs. Peters also became the seventh man in White Sox history to accomplish the feat of a cycle. The most recent prior to Peters last night, Jose Abreu, back in 2017. So, obviously, the White Sox were cruising, but Colson Montgomery, what a defensive gem the following inning.
The pitch hit on the ground towards center, cut off by Montgomery. The spin, the throw, he got him! Oh, what a play by Colson Montgomery to get Carota Grauer.
We move to the bottom of the eighth. Carlos Cortez on the mound for the Athletics. And why do I note that? Well, Cortez is an outfielder, so we had a position player pitching, and Miguel Vargas took advantage.
Swinging a deep drive, left field. It is gone. Vargas with a home run. 13-1 in the eighth.
White Sox would go on to win 14-1. Tristan Peters joined Brooke Fletcher on the field after the game on CHSN and obviously talked about what a great night he had.
I feel like I got to wear it for the rest of the year at this point. That was pretty cool.
What was this experience like? You're the seventh person in White Sox history to hit the cycle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm honored. I mean, that's the coolest thing I've ever done. I mean, blessed to do it in front of these fans and this city. It's incredible.
Were you thinking triple?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I hit that, and I saw it go down the line. I'm going three no matter what here.
Did he ever say anything to you after?
No, he said, not really. He was like, he told me he gave the stop sign, and I saw it, and I'm like, I'm going through. I don't care. I'll be a little selfish at this point, but yeah, no, he didn't say much.
What was it like this whole game, the atmosphere and everything?
I mean, it was incredible. Sold out crowd. It's awesome. Everybody supporting us like that, it helps tremendously. And, I mean, the team, obviously you saw it, we were fired up and a lot of energy, and that's how we do it.
Having Winnie back also helps the whole team, too.
Absolutely. He brings great energy, and he's just such a good guy to have around, and obviously an amazing player, too. Really brings a thumb to the offense.
Chris, we've asked a lot of the pitchers about, you know, coming to the All-Star break, how would they assess their first half? How would you, I mean, what you've done, how would you assess what you've done up to this point?
Yeah, no, I'm very happy with it. I think there's always room for improvement, and we keep making strides every day. I work with the hitting coaches on swing stuff. My approach, too, I want to hone in on that a little bit more. But, yeah, there's always work to be done.
What's it like to be so productive where you hit in the batting order?
I'm going to do it wherever I'm put. I'm going to put my best foot forward and do what I got to do. Yeah, somebody said that. I think Davis grabbed it. I haven't seen it yet.
You know, after the Boston series, everyone kind of said, like, you guys would be able to shrug it off. This is obviously a big way to shrug it off. But
yeah.
Is it any surprise that you guys kind of bounce back like this?
No, I'm not shocked at all. I mean, that's just kind of what we do. We've done this the whole first half. That's what we do. We don't dwell on the past, and we move on to the next game. We take it day by day, game by game.
Now you're the first kid from Winkler, Manitoba, to cycle. I'm just trying to figure out if you're the first Canadian born.
Second.
Interesting. Very cool.
What does that mean to you? The national pride.
Yeah, I mean, that's really cool to be one of two guys from Canada to hit the cycle. That's pretty, it's incredible. I'm honored.
Have you had previous moments in your career where you tip your cap to the fans as they jog out? Or
No, I've never had that experience, especially in front of this many people. It was awesome.
Another fantastic night for Tristan Peters, who has just been an absolute revelation. Offensively, what he's provided has been, you know, more than the White Sox ever could have expected or anticipated. I actually asked Chris Getz about a month ago before he's already added on, but, you know, just did they ever envision, you know, he could be this type of player at the plate? Was he surprised? And he said yes. You know, even he and the front office have been surprised by what he's been able to do, how productive he's been. He's now registered 3 wins above replacement, and we're a little over halfway through the season here. That's amazing, considering what the White Sox have found right now, a 26-year-old center field who plays excellent defense and now is slashing after last night's cycle, .303 with a .357 on base and a .484 slug, 6 homers. He's added 5 steals. And last night he did it from the 9 hole because Munetaka Murakami returned. And so it made all the sense in the world. Tristan Peters just now the way the lineup has been lengthened out with Murakami. My goodness, things are obviously, when you look at what the White Sox can put out each and every day, you have to be encouraged. And it was a really nice way for the White Sox to bounce back after a difficult series against the Boston Red Sox. White Sox now 48-45, tied with the Cleveland Guardians for first place in the American League Central. Guardians are 49-46. They won last night as well. The Twins lost, so the Twins fall to 3 games back. And the Tigers, they're trying to get themselves back into the race. They're now on a 6-game winning streak, and the Tigers are 4.5 games back of the White Sox and Guardians, again, for first place in the American League Central. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. In addition to that, shortly after the White Sox game wrapped up last night, the White Sox made a move. They did indeed make a trade, and it affects what is going to be happening today in the Major League Baseball draft, and I will share that with you in a minute. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark for Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola. The first 125 kids to enter at Gate 5 will head to Wintrust Kids Zone Mini Field to receive autographs from some of their favorite players, plus enjoy family-friendly activities. Kids can run the bases and so much more. To learn more, purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. When we come back, I'll let you know about that trade the White Sox made and how exactly it affects them for today's draft. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The home of the Sox. This is ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly live at Wright Field as we are getting set for the second of 3 between the White Sox and Athletics before we hit the All-Star break after Sunday's game. After last night's game, White Sox, with a bit of a surprise, Jeff Passan broke the news as we were in our post-game coverage. The White Sox dealt Jacob Gonzalez. Yes, the left-hander who filled in admirably while Munetaka Murakami was on the injured list. Jacob Gonzalez primarily featured at first base for the White Sox during Murakami's injury. So the White Sox dealt Jacob Gonzalez, who had been optioned to Charlotte with Murakami's return. There just wasn't going to be regular at-bats for Gonzalez at the major league level, so the White Sox were obviously thinking about sending him back to Charlotte so that he could, you know, with a young player, you don't want them sitting on the bench, you know, losing the, you know, the development time. So the White Sox, with the roster crunch, sent Gonzalez to Charlotte. Then he was pulled in the middle of the game. And as I noted, Jeff Passan then broke the news 9:43 last night. The White Sox dealt Jacob Gonzalez and left-handed reliever Brandon Eichert for the 34th pick in today's draft, along with left-handed reliever Jaden Woods. So the White Sox deal Gonzalez and Eichert, and they pick up the 34th pick. That is a Comp A pick. Those are the Comp picks are the only picks that can be traded by major league teams. And what that does is it gives the White Sox the largest draft bonus pool ever. That is right. They now have a pool of $20.48 million, so almost $20.5 million. And with the 5% overage that you can factor in, the White Sox can spend a little over $21 million on their draft picks today. First four rounds will take place today. Actually, rounds 5 through 20 will occur tomorrow. So obviously lots of intrigue today. But yes, so the White Sox make the move primarily to add another pick and obviously some significant money to their draft pool. Nearly $3 million comes with this pick. So gives them the flexibility. I don't think it in any way is going to affect who they will select first overall. They didn't need additional money. We heard from Mike Shirley earlier this week, who I'm going to play for you later in White Sox Weekly, but Mike Shirley talked about narrowing it down to the three names that everybody's heard: Rochkalowski, Grady Emerson, the prep high schooler from Texas, and then, of course, Von Lackey, the catcher from Georgia Tech, and Chalowski's from, he's the shortstop from UCLA. I didn't even mention that because I assume by now everybody knows of Rochkalowski. But, you know, I suspect Shirley said it as much, that it's come down to those three players. I think it's probably going to be one of the shortstops. I think Von Lackey has an outside chance. But yesterday's deal doesn't really affect the top overall pick. What it does affect, though, is the White Sox ability to get aggressive on some younger high school players who may be considering college, but now the White Sox are going to be able to tempt them with a bigger signing bonus and potentially select some interesting players with not just 41, but 34 as well. So that's what that deal does. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to give you more information about some of the potential names that the White Sox can be thinking about in those spots. And of course, what they are likely going to be doing with the top overall pick. James Fox of Future Sox joins me next here on White Sox Weekly. So Sox fans, head to the ballpark Saturday, July 25th, as the White Sox take on the Astros at 6:10. 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a City Connect basketball warm-up presented by Wintrust, or skip the lines and secure your promo at checkout with guaranteed promo. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. When we come back, we will talk to James Fox. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Have not come on a hit. That ball smoked to left. Hit well into the corner, and it is gone. Four will score on a grand slam from Rochkalowski.
Scouts have a difficult time finding any flaw in Grady Emerson's game. And one noting, the worst thing you can say about him is that he's not Bobby Wood Jr. Emerson's advanced skills stand out as much as his tools, starting with the way he stacks the quality of bats, making good swing decisions, barreling balls to all fields from the left side of the plate. He generates impressive exit velocities with a pretty left-hand stroke, and while he doesn't sell for power, his bat speed and projectable strength put him future 25-homer pop.
1-1 from Griffiths, and that is crushed high into the Statesboro sky in left field. Goodbye, Von Lackey! A 3-run moonshot, and the Yellow Jackets extend the lead to make it 13-0.
The day has finally arrived, White Sox fans. The 2026 MLB Amateur Draft begins today at 12:30. White Sox expected to make the top selection around 12:37 this afternoon. Of course, we will bring it for you live on the White Sox pregame show ahead of the 1:10 first pitch between the White Sox and Athletics, live here at Wright Field. White Sox win the series opener last night in thrilling fashion, thrilling for White Sox fans at least, 14-1 clobbering of the A's. Tristan Peters goes for the cycle as Munetaka Murakami makes his return, and Sean Burke dominates. Colson Montgomery with a wizardry-like defensive play at shortstop, which leads, I think, nicely to one of the questions about what the White Sox will be doing with their first overall pick today. James Fox does a fabulous job covering the White Sox and the White Sox organization in terms of minor leagues and what the White Sox should be doing here in this upcoming draft. He covers the Sox for Future Sox, and James Fox, kind enough to hop on White Sox Weekly and give us some insight on what the White Sox are potentially thinking with the top overall pick, and perhaps maybe more importantly, help clarify why the White Sox chose to trade Jacob Gonzalez and Brandon Eisert for the 34th overall pick last night, a comp pick to add to their draft bonus pool. James joins me now. James, good afternoon. How you doing, my man?
I'm good, Jeff. How's it going? Seems like a lot going on, huh? We're finally here.
Yeah, no, it's been certainly a busy last couple of weeks, crescendoing to today with the draft, of course, right ahead of the All-Star break. So last night, the White Sox make the deal for they deal away Jacob Gonzalez for the comp pick to add to their draft pool. Explain to the listeners a little bit, James, what this does, why it was important for Chris Getz and the front office to make this addition when they already had won the draft lottery. And I would imagine you would probably agree it doesn't affect their decision on the top overall pick in any way.
No, I don't think it affects what they do at one. I mean, it gives you more money for sure, which, you know, I'll get into. So, yeah, so the Pirates have been rumored to be, like, looking to trade the 34th pick in the draft. It's a competitive balance selection that the small market clubs get. Those are the only picks that can be traded. And it comes with a bonus pool of nearly $3 million, or a bonus slot of nearly $3 million. You know, I had been kind of speculating for weeks that the White Sox might be interested in that pick just based off some things that I'd heard, but I really didn't, like, see how they would line up, because the rumor was that the Pirates were looking for, like, a big league reliever with control, right? And mm-hmm. I just didn't see the White Sox trading, like, a Brian Hudson type guy in the middle of a pennant race, right?
Sure.
So it ends up being Jacob Gonzalez. They have Connor Griffin out. Look, it makes sense. I understand, like, some fans I've seen, I guess I've used the word consternation over it, right? Like, that's a guy who is probably the first guy up to help you, like, in case of an injury. There's no spot for Jacob Gonzalez on this team, like, as another left-handed hitting infielder, mm-hmm. you know, like, without an injury, right? And it is a guy with some value, former first-round pick who, you know, had a really terrible start to his career and finally figured it out this year. Though, you know, the couple things I think to focus on, he was not a Chris Getz draft pick, right, which I do think is important. The White Sox clearly felt like Jacob Gonzalez wasn't part of their future core by making this move, you know, including Brandon Eisert. It also clears up two 40-man spots. They got a big-time 40-man crunch coming with a lot of guys coming off the injured list. And then what it does for you is, yeah, I mean, it gives you the 34th pick in the draft, which is a shot at another premium, like, high school player potentially, and $3 million added to their bonus pool, which takes them up over $20 million. So they can spend, like, $21.5 million on this draft, which is, you know, the biggest bonus pool that's, like, provided to any team in this draft.
Yeah, so that will, yeah, the White Sox go into today with the most money to spend. And that's something to keep in mind, James, that, you know, I'm sure casual baseball fans like you and I are in it. We kind of understand a lot of the everything that goes into it. But the truth is that casual fans may not understand. They may look at the NFL draft, the NHL draft, the NBA draft, and wonder, okay, why do we talk so much about draft pool money? But for baseball, it's not as cut and dry. Now, the one thing I will add is that, hey, Mike Shirley, Chris Getz, they've been adamant that they're going to take the best player available. And I, you know, who they deem to be the best player available in the draft at the end of the day, I believe them. I don't think, especially based on what we've heard, James, I don't think Rock Chulowski, even though there was, you know, some rumors floated about him maybe trying to manipulate it so that he could end up with the San Francisco Giants. The only way is if he was going to outright say, hey, I want the most, you know, the highest signing bonus ever, and if I don't get it, I'm going to refuse to play for you. That's really the only path if he was going to try and manipulate it. But it doesn't seem like him and his representation, who also represent Grady Emerson, by the way, are going that route. They're going to, in all likelihood, if the White Sox want Rock, he's going to play here.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the two guys. It does seem like it's come into focus a little bit, where it would be a surprise if it's not UCLA's Rock Chulowski. You know, the thing that's interesting is he is going to get a record-setting bonus, because, you know, the record bonus as of right now is $9.3 million. He's going to get more than that. I think the question was more like, how far into the 10 million range are they willing to do, right? And I don't even know that if it'll be 10, Jeff, but it doesn't really matter if it's 10 million, if it's 9.8 million. They're still going to have a ton to spend. I mean, they've typically gone over in early rounds over their slot to sign high school players. And they've done that with going slot value at number one. They're going to save about $1.5 million at the number one pick no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the casual fans, like, that's not being cheap. That's $1.5 million that you can then allocate to, like, a later pick, which is really going to be quite helpful. So he'll get the biggest bonus. He'll be happy. And then, you know, the White Sox will get to kind of look at the board and see what else they can get done.
James Fox of Future Sox joining me here on White Sox Weekly. So you're of the mind that you believe they will select Rochkalovsky this afternoon?
I believe so. I mean, I think there was a lot of Grady Emerson stuff. I understand it. I've stuck with Rochkalovsky the entire time just because, you know, like I think there's a high ceiling and there's a high floor, right? Mm-hmm. And I just think I thought that once it came down time to like actually make the pick, right? When Chris Getz goes to his other stakeholders, I just thought Rochkalovsky made the most sense. Now, having the bonus pool lets you take a bunch of stabs at other, like, premium prep talent later on. But, yeah, if it's not Rochkalovsky at this point, I think it would be pretty surprising about an hour from the festivities kicking off.
Okay, so just to play devil's advocate here, make the case for why Grady Emerson, if he was the selection, would be okay.
Yeah, I think you have to really believe in the hit tool. I think it's a premium high school shortstop who, you know, these types of guys go up this high frequently. It's a left-handed bat. You know, the misconception out there, like, I don't really like the comparisons to Bobby Witt Jr. because mm-hmm. they're really not that similar. He's not as fast as Bobby Witt Jr. He's not as good of a defender. I don't know that he'll have that level of power, right? I think more along the lines of a Kevin McGonigal, who's a really good player, right? But you have to really believe in the hit tool. And if you want to put a 70 grade hit on a high school guy, you know, you have to be pretty certain, right? Because if that ends up being a 55, like if we're wrong,
yeah,
I just don't know that player is a star and there's a longer runway. So I totally understand scouts who think like 3 years from now, Grady Emerson's going to be the better guy. Totally understand it. If they took him, I'd get it. I just think in this case, when you have the number one pick, Chris Getz has said out loud, he's talked to other guys who have had the number one pick, and they all tell him, don't overthink it. I think mm-hmm. not overthinking it is taking Rochkalovsky.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. So I guess my question would be the follow-up there. Part of Rochkalovsky's value is tied up with the idea that he could provide gold glove caliber defense. And, you know, this is something that's been a theme. I think anybody who has followed baseball closely now for the past decade should understand that, you know, you're rarely going to go wrong selecting a shortstop, because the truth is the best athletes play shortstop and you can usually find a position. Hence, someone like Jacob Gonzalez. You see it with Chase Mydroth. You see it with Sam Antonacci. If they can play shortstop, they can usually figure it out somewhere else on the diamond. But when so much value is maybe tied up with Rochkalovsky's ability defensively, how does that sit with you knowing that the White Sox have Colson Montgomery, who's been, I think, more than solid defensively, even though he's had a bit of a hiccup for the last week? But overall, his defensive ability at the major league level here has been, I think, more than solid. And then you factor in what they did last year, selecting Billy Carlson, who certainly there's hope that he'll provide some power and grow into, his hit tool. But the truth is that a lot of Billy Carlson's value is tied up in his defensive ability. So how does it sit with you if they select Rochkalovsky, having Colson on the roster and also Billy Carlson in the system?
Yeah, I really don't think you worry about it. I mean, it's just, you just always want to take shortstops, right? It is a good question though, in regards to Rock, because like, it's easy for us to say like, oh, you just keep drafting shortstops and play them all over. Right. I don't know that Rock is as valuable if he's at second or at third or somewhere else. Right. So like, I do think if you take Rochkalovsky, you're looking at him as your future shortstop mm-hmm. and pretty soon, you know,
yes.
pretty soon, maybe by midseason 2027, you know, for whatever reason, it does seem like there are some reservations internally about Colson Montgomery playing shortstop long-term. He's really good as we know. And, you know, the numbers are really good, but I also think he's really good if he's at third too. Like, I just like, don't think it's that big of a deal. I think you take Rochkalovsky and you kind of let things sort themselves out. And if he forces his way to the big leagues, then he just, you know, becomes like another guy and you start shifting guys around. I think it kind of takes care of itself. Billy Carlson, obviously, he's in low A, Kannapolis. It's like kind of a longer path for him, right? And they have Caleb Bonnemer, who there are some defensive questions about. And look, Jeff, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they take other shortstops today. Like, you know what I mean? And other
of
routes.
Course.
So yeah. I just think Chris Getz has preached premium positions. It's lots of shortstops, it's catchers, it's center fielders, because they just think those guys can move everywhere.
And don't get me wrong, I completely agree, James, with the philosophy. I think you're just, that's the way that, you know, it just makes sense. The best athletes play shortstop all throughout high school, and you want those guys. They'll figure it out defensively somewhere else on the diamond if they can handle shortstop. You know, my only, like you said, the only reservations is slightly, hey, if Rock's like, you know, if you think of him as a gold glove caliber shortstop, you want him playing shortstop. And when the value's tied up in there, that's the only thing that would maybe like give me hesitation and start to think about someone like Grady Emerson, who might have a better hit tool. But I think you're right. When you kind of like, projecting a high schooler versus a more known college bat, I certainly have a little bit more, I feel a little bit more confident in Chalowski for the long term. One more before I let you go, James. So what do you think about what they could do at 34 and 41? Of course, the rumors are Landon Tomey, Jim's son, getting a, you know, there's a lot out there. Do you believe where there's smoke, there's fire with Landon Tomey? And do you believe he'll even make it to 34?
I think so. They know him really well. You know, I think it's like one of these things too, where if Landon Tomey and Jim Tomey really want Landon Tomey to be a White Sox player, you can do it with a prep guy. It, you know, like if he's given teams a big number, like whatever, $4 million to sign, like you can get him down to your spot. They're kind of talking about Landon Tomey as if he's already in the organization, which is kind of funny, but so yeah, Nazareth Academy product. I do think there's some other local guys though that are in play today. Jack Slightem. He's a little bit of a pop-up guy this year. He's a right-handed pitcher from Lyons Township High School. You know, he also played quarterback at the school. He didn't do, like, all of the showcase baseball events where, you know, we've known about him for years. But he's a right-handed pitcher, you know, that looks like he's going to have some pretty premium stuff that could go pretty early today. I think he's an option. They've also been linked to Dominic Santarelli, who's a power-hitting, like, corner type from a Wisconsin high school that was on their area codes team. They love Midwest players. They love their area codes team. So those are three names. And then Jonathan Mayo also linked them to a two-way player by the name of Archer Horn, who's a high schooler out of California. He's a Stanford commit. Those guys are always kind of tough to sign. But, you know, if it's Rock at one, I would expect multiple prep players like with those next picks at 34, 41, and 77.
Great stuff as always, James. Appreciate it. James Fox of Future Sox. Check out his stuff there. I know he put up his mock draft 3.0, I believe, the other day, which I was perusing. So Sox fans, if you want some last minute primer before the Sox draft actually takes place, check that out. Again, we're closing in on under an hour here, James, and obviously I know you'll have a lot of great breakdown when the picks are actually selected. So thanks as always for hopping on White Sox Weekly, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. Appreciate it.
No problem. Again, that is James Fox of Future Sox. They do a great job of keeping tabs on the White Sox entire minor league organization as well. So for the Sox fans who want to get in on the nitty-gritty about what's going on down at Charlotte or Birmingham, or you heard him mention Kannapolis for Billy Carlson, Winston-Salem, they have you covered. A great resource for Sox fans who want to know all about what's going on inside the organization. I know we don't always have enough time to necessarily cover everything here on White Sox Weekly because, of course, our primary focus is what's going on at the big league level. So, but always worth following them because they do great content. White Sox fans, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2027 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups and exciting new promotions. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2027. As I noted, Munetaka Murakami did get the news that he would be an all-star, and Mike Vassell, as he did with Miguel Vargas, broke the news to him. We'll let you hear that when we come back and get you plenty more regarding today's game and what's going on with the draft as well. I've got a couple of lineups for you, so plenty to do here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
It's simple. The ESPN Chicago app.
Jeff Meller back at Wright Field here on White Sox Weekly every Saturday, 2 hours prior to our pregame coverage. Pregame show officially starts at 12:30 today, 1:10 first pitch between the White Sox and Athletics. White Sox took the series opener last night, 14-1 thumping of the A's. They'll go for the series win today after they make the first overall selection in the Major League Baseball draft. White Sox expected to pick around 12:37 this afternoon, so we will bring you that selection live during our pregame show. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark on Sunday, July 26th, as the White Sox take on the Houston Astros at 1:10. 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a Munetaka Murakami first Major League Baseball home run bobblehead presented by Toto Washlets. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promo. Speaking of Mune, he made his return to the White Sox lineup last night, played first base, got himself a hit, and also, prior to the game beginning, found out that he would indeed be a member of the American League All-Star team. He also accepted an invitation to participate in Monday night's Home Run Derby, becoming just the seventh player in White Sox history to receive that honor. He will. It's happened eight other times. Frank Thomas actually partook twice in the Home Run Derby. So this is Murakami receiving the news right before the game inside the clubhouse with his teammates surrounding him, and Will Venable passing the baton to Mike Vassell to break the news that Munetaka Murakami is indeed a member of the American League All-Star team.
All right, guys, we have another very special announcement to make. I'm going to kick it right to Vass.
All right, fellas, this guy, tremendous one, tremendous human being. One of the best people I've probably ever played with. Incredibly nice. One of the hardest working guys I know. Truly is all about actions speak louder than words. And a few things right now about him. Seventh rookie in White Sox history to be named to the All-Star team. First Japanese born All-Star in Sox history. Yes, I'm speaking to you now, Mune. Mr. Murakami, congratulations. You are an All-Star. Come on. Come on.
Hey, you're the man. I love you.
I just want to appreciate to every single player, staff, and everybody in their organization to really support me through my reapplication process. And I'm really glad to be back here with you guys in the locker room. I'm able to participate in this event because of you guys really warming up to me, being a very good teammate, just being there for me every single day. And having those teammates are what made me today, and I really like to appreciate that, and I feel really glad to represent the team and play for the White Sox in the All-Star game. To be honest, I don't really care about this presentation right now. All I care is about winning these next three games, so let's go out and get it.
Obviously, the White Sox have had some pretty cool moments this season. That another one, just like when Miguel Vargas got the news from Mike Vassell. So pretty cool that Munetaka Murakami returns in time to receive the honor. He's back in the White Sox lineup today. No surprise, he's DHing today. He played first base last night. Always knew that he was going to at one point DH during this series, and obviously he is today. If he feels well, I'm sure he'll be back at first base tomorrow, but that's no surprise there. So Randall Grichuk will lead off. Murakami hits second. Miguel Vargas batting third today. Colson Montgomery going to play third base and clean up. Chase Mydroth will be at second base, batting fifth. Braden Montgomery's in right field. The switch hitter will hit sixth. Luis Angel Acuna at shortstop bats seventh. Junior Perez in center, batting eighth. And then your switch hitting catcher, Drew Romo, rounds out the lineup for the White Sox today. When we come back, Connor McKnight is already at the draft. He just texted me a photo. We'll check in with him and see what he is hearing about the White Sox number one overall selection today. I'm Jeff Meller. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The legendary AM 1000, the home of the Chicago White Sox.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly, getting set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Athletics. Perhaps, though, something that is at the forefront of White Sox fans' minds is what will take place prior to today's game, and that is the White Sox making the first overall selection in the 2026 MLB draft. Connor McKnight is live in Philadelphia. He is in the building covering it for CHSN. Connor, I saw your photo. Looks like they have things dressed up and looking pretty nifty out there.
Indeed they have. The DJ just started playing, and we're getting ready for the first pick of the MLB draft, which the White Sox will make in short order. It'll be interesting to see who it ends up being. I think the obvious favorites, as you know, and have probably been talking about for weeks now, are Rock Chalowski and Grady Emerson. Vaughn Lackey a possibility as well. But I think everyone here has waited with bated breath. As people check their credentials on the way in, mm-hmm. You know, they notice that it says Chicago on the credential, and then they ask you, hey, who are you guys taking? And I'm like, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It's a lot of fun to watch. Everybody's really curious who's going first overall here with a couple of very good prospects on the board for the White Sox at one.
All right, Connor, so what was your thought when you saw the White Sox trade Jacob Gonzalez last night and Brandon Isert for that 34th overall pick, the comp pick that the Pirates received, and, of course, the lefty reliever as well thrown into that? But what was your initial thoughts when you saw that trade come across last night?
Well, I'll tell you what, Jeff, I was not surprised that Jacob Gonzalez was traded. I was surprised that it was for more prospect and draft capital
than
something that was going to help out, you know, kind of a major league roster here. So that's curious. Definitely not a bad move for this team, and certainly one that brings back a lot of value. The 34th pick overall adds something close to $3 million, I believe, if I'm doing the math right. And
yes.
If I'm wrong, please let me know.
No,
it's a rule.
I believe it was 2.9, but yes, so perfect. Almost three.
Good. Yeah, but Brendan Riley set a rule that I'm not allowed to do math live on air during White Sox Weekly, and here I am breaking the rule. But yeah, I mean, that's a significant amount of money in this draft that has a lot of talent, especially at the high school pitching level. You know, is that an area where the White Sox want to go and get a little large in this draft? Do they covet Landon Tomy as much as it has been reported here over the last year? I'm sure that that's a possibility for them at 34. A lot of conversation had been going on lately that Tomei might not make it all the way to 41, their prior second pick, and now at 34, that's a significant jump up in the draft. So three picks in the top 41, and another one before the day is over today in the hundreds. It'll be very interesting to see. But listen, I think you've got to kind of credit both the player development situation for the White Sox and Jacob Gonzalez himself for doing what he did to get himself better at baseball over the last year, right? I mean,
yes.
This is a player that was, you know, you hate to use the phrase sunk cost or kind of lost cause, but the White Sox have been able to rescue guys that have been close to that. And, you know, whether it was some of the big hits that he had in Philadelphia or, you know, a couple of big home runs here, or honestly, you know, aside from a few mistakes, not errors, I guess they're termed errors in the game book, but mistakes at first, those are just mistakes of a guy who hasn't played there in ever. You look at the actual glove work over there, Jacob was really good at first base. So they got a lot out of him while they needed him. Now Murakami is back, and those assets are going to be turned toward the future.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's, you know, I think that just reinforces the narrative, not just around the White Sox, but all of baseball. That's why you want shortstops, right? And it's full circle here. This is why you draft someone like Rock Chalowski or Grady Emerson in all likelihood with the first overall pick, because even though you've got Colson Montgomery, who has played really good defense at the major league level, you can never have too many shortstops. You can always figure it out. If they can handle shortstop, they'll be able to do just fine at second base or first base if you give them a little bit of time to get themselves accustomed to the position.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, even moving into the outfield is far from daunting for a lot of those guys who come up as shortstops. And, you know, one of the interesting things here, I mean, let's just play the hypothetical. Let's say the White Sox have become enamored with Vaughn Lackey and, you know, have kept that quiet over the last month and a half or however. Vaughn Lackey is an incredibly athletic catcher. He's a guy who's able to do a lot of things in a lot of different positions. So, and I'm not, you know, this is just being hypothetical since we're here and staring at the draft page and I'm watching guys like Jim Callis get set up for his show here in just a little bit. It is, you know, it's, the athleticism is there at the top of this draft with all three players that are, you know, heavily rumored and even mentioned by Mike Shirley, the director of minor league, or what is it, the director of the draft. These are the three guys, and there's athleticism between all three of them.
No, yeah, and yeah, I don't want to dismiss, obviously, you're right, Lackey, you know, one of the comps, I've talked to DJ about this, you know, one of his favorite players, Dalton Varsho. He was a catcher, and he's one of the best center fielders defensively out there. If for whatever reason the White Sox chose Von Lackey, he certainly could be someone you could envision, you know, handling center field if you wanted to go that route as well. But his, a lot of his value is also tied up in the fact that he's a great defensive catcher. So yeah, those we've heard it, you know, ad nauseum at this point. Those two positions are critical when you're trying to assemble your teams organizationally, and the White Sox have done a really nice job with that. So, but let's get Rock versus Grady. How do you feel, Connor, just put on your analyst cap here for me, you know, make the case for either or both if you want, you know, as to which guy you would like to see the White Sox select?
Sure. I'll do a little bit of both here. You and I talked about this a lot. I had the good fortune of calling some Big Ten games last season when Rock Chalowski was in the midst of his excellent, outstanding Golden Spike sophomore season. Saw him play, talked to some coaches around that league, talked to a lot of evaluators in and around there, and Chalowski's talent is pretty superior. The glove is absolutely exceptional. It's a high-caliber major league shortstop glove, which obviously sets the floor very high, regardless of what your offense looks like after that. Rock is also a pretty darn good offensive player. Maybe not necessarily with the power upside that you might see from, or that we have seen from Colson Montgomery, perhaps, but certainly a guy who knows how to control the plate, understands his own strike zone, and how to get his own swing off. There'll have to be adjustments along the way. The quality of Big Ten pitching, as you know, isn't quite what it is in the SEC or perhaps even the ACC. Still, Rock did a great job. All things put together over the last 2 years, getting the job done against some big-time pitching at the collegiate level. I don't think you can go wrong with Rock Chalowski at one overall here. Grady Emerson is Rock Chalowski 3 years ago, maybe even better. And the split there for me is that you're projecting 3 years back and making sure you have to promise yourself that he'll get, that Emerson is going to get to where Chalowski can get. You know, for me, I think I take the floor. I certainly understand the White Sox, though, kind of feeling now that their hitter development side has caught up with the pitching development side and can trust that organization with a younger player, with a little bit more projection and development. I think those are the things that the White Sox are kind of weighing at this point when you boil it down to those two players. The thing that did cross my mind, though, Jeff, is when they traded for number 34 just last night, that's a lot of money, like we talked about. And if you were at all worried about covering the bonus demands of the guy who's been essentially the wire-to-wire one pick with just now one guy bubbling up to maybe take it from you, you would imagine that Chalowski is the more expensive of the two, likely, right?
Yes.
So now you picked up this extra money, and maybe you felt you needed it. If that's true and you think that's a tip, then perhaps it is Chalowski at one for the White Sox.
Connor McKnight live in Philadelphia covering the Major League Baseball draft for another minute here. And Connor, this is pretty cool because you're there for the draft, but of course the All-Star festivities begin on Monday with the Home Run Derby, which we learned last night Munetaka Murakami will be participating in, along with playing in the All-Star game. And it just broke now officially, one day after hitting for the cycle, Tristan Peters has been named to the American League All-Star team. So you're going to have three White Sox there to chase around and follow in Philadelphia. What a story, though. I mean, Murakami obviously making it back, but then Tristan Peters, unbelievable, Connor.
It's truly incredible. I mean, at the point where I went down to spring training looking for, you know, who was going to make the team and at what spots and all that kind of stuff, I kept on being told Tristan Peters has a real chance to make it. He's been really athletic and a good defensive center fielder and a guy that can trust up in a couple of different situations with the bat. There was no conversation, Jeff. Absolutely no conversation about what he could do from a power standpoint, about how he'd hit left-handed pitching. None of that. This was a defense-first, good help, can't hurt kind of guy. He has turned into, as the All-Star selection suggests, one of the best in the game. Defensively, he's been outstanding. The jump and ground cover, the out-to-above average, it's all there. He's made some spectacular diving catches. And the way he's able to cover all parts of the plate is pretty spectacular at this point. He turns on, he's up in the strike zone better than maybe anybody else save Sam Antonacci on this team right now. And that's just not a carrying trait that was discussed at all. But we were talking about him 3 months ago. I think the strides he's made in season to develop his own swing rival anybody on this team, maybe a lot of guys in the American League. This is a guy who was bunt first, maybe even bunt only, for the first 3 to 4 weeks of the season, and is now an American League All-Star. This is much more than finding, you know, a shiny diamond in the rough here. This is so much more than that. And they got him for essentially no cost to what they were able to do this season. It's truly incredible. Kudos to the White Sox development staff, to Tristan Peters himself, and congratulations, because I know he's going to enjoy the hell out of this weekend.
Yeah, no, it's just an unbelievable story for him, and you just keep thinking, wow. I mean, your weekend got a lot busier all of a sudden because you went from one All-Star to three All-Stars. You've obviously got the draft today. So, Connor, thanks for the time today. I know you're busy, so enjoy the draft, enjoy the weekend, and or the week ahead, I guess, and we'll talk to you soon, man. Thanks as always.
Sounds good, Jeff. Anytime.
Connor McKnight of CHSN covering the draft in Philadelphia and also the All-Star game. And as I noted there, the news broke while Connor was talking about Rock Chalowski and Grady Emerson. That is right, folks. Tristan Peters has officially been named to the All-Star team, which brings the White Sox total to 3 now. Miguel Vargas, of course, got the initial selection. Munetaka Murakami, we found out last night prior to the start of the game. Murakami will also participate in the Home Run Derby. And then, of course, just moments ago, we learned that Tristan Peters now has been added to the American League All-Star team as well. And just what a story for Tristan Peters. Remember, Luis Angel Acuna was brought in here, and I think the primary thought was that he would be the White Sox primary center fielder this year, and Tristan Peters, though, has made it so that with the defense he plays and offensively what he's brought to the table, he's taken the job and making it his own, which is just unbelievable. And as Connor noted there, a testament to the White Sox developmental staff. Pretty cool. When we come back, we'll let you hear from White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting, Mike Shirley. He joined the media earlier this week and fielded a lot of questions, and I'm sure we'll answer a lot of things you're wondering ahead of the draft, which is going to begin in under an hour now. We are expecting the White Sox to make their selection right around 12:37, which, again, we will bring you live right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Get weird with Waddle's World on ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back here at Rate Field as we get set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Athletics. Sox fans, take advantage of savings all summer long with our Summer Savings section. Score select lower-level tickets starting at $20 on weekdays and $25 on weekends. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. All right, we're closing in on the draft, of course. First pick expected right around 12:37, which we will bring for you live right here on your home of the White Sox. Mike Shirley, the director of amateur scouting, met with the media on Wednesday and talked about where the organization is at.
I think we're super excited. I think from an organizational standpoint, to be able to execute something we're so fortunate to secure, right? I think it's been a great process, and the most important thing, I feel really good about what the future of Major League Baseball is. The talent's real. We'll be able to pick who we feel is the best player. I think everybody's pretty certain who the candidates are. I think from an organizational standpoint, you look at our Major League team, what we've been able to do with these position players, the development of the hitting program has been real. So when you look at where we're choosing, what we're trying to do, I do think the candidates will help justify where we're going to go with this. It's still a little bit of an open book, but I think we all know who the candidates are here, and we're working extremely hard. you know, the Chulowski-Emerson conversation, the Vaughn Lackey conversation, these are real. They are happening. They're happening up to the minute. You have a catcher, and then the continuation of these shortstops that continue to define the game across the league. We are searching for this, right? So we're doing our very absolute best up to the minute to make the best choice.
You also said you have, I mean, you have a $17 million winning, 17.5,
yeah. Like that. Yeah.
Cool. And you said you want to make it an impactful draft across, not just 1-1, but as much as you can to make it kind of an impactful draft.
Yeah, I think the pool space is real. You got to be able to utilize the assets that was given to you. Like, think about the pain to get to the losses to be able to pick one, right? So I think it's up to us where the club is headed, the direction Chris has taken the club, the performance of the players. We're not going to be in this position much longer. So I do think how we build out the first pick in the total draft, we must capture the best value, and we feel good about the targets, the direction. The pitching we have to secure a little bit more, maybe to continue building up the supply, the totality. So we're working really hard to build up that depth right now.
As far as a player's timeline, given a high school player and a college player, given where the major league club is, does either status make a difference?
Yeah. If you looked out on that field right now, we have pieces in place, right? I think when you look, we're not looking for a savior. It's never been Chris's goal to find saviors. It's been his goal to continue to add to the totality of this team, okay? So regardless of what happens, it's our job to continue to build an organization. He's never going to stop with that being his plan. You got to keep adding to a puzzle and keep going. It's not about the next player or what. It's about who can we acquire that keeps this thing moving in a direction. If you watch Will run the club, he does it with deploying people in multiple spaces. He does it with adverse, like being able to like build out a lineup every day to help win the game today. If you understand where that White Sox are going with that plan, we're going to execute that with our draft. We're not going to be sole, oh, we got to have a shortstop, we got to have a catcher. Who's going to best define the totality, how we want the club to work?
Can you talk about the process? Because it is different now because of where you're picking, what the team is doing, and who will make the final decision?
I think we're all making the final decision together. I think this is collaboration. I think the change that's happened here is real and how we're all collaborating together. You know, it's player development is heavy in the draft room right now as we're blending this as the scouts are. It's research and development doing their part. It's collaboration with, you know, the PD department. Paul Janish is in there. We're talking about the makeup of the player, how they fit together, why they build out. So it's, I don't think it's any one person, but it's, you know, Chris Goetz is running this organization. And I believe Jerry really trusts Chris to make the final decision. He does. He likes where the direction of the club is going. I think the fan base likes where the direction of the club is going.
So you're dealing with things like high ceiling, safe floor. How do you protect things like that?
We're picking one. I think when you're picking one, they all have that. They have ceiling. They have present value. They have tools. They have all the things you're looking for. We feel good about that. You know, and I think, like when you guys ask about, was a high school player get here? Guys, I'm going to keep continuing to tell you this. High school players are facing 95. They're facing 98. They're accustomed to the stuff. So it's not like when they get to Major League, it's going to be the first time they ever see that. They're seeing this stuff. And I, like you see Connor Griffin, you see the top high school players across the country get to the Major Leagues fast. That's going to continue to happen. They're very talented people. They're in training models that expedite it. And when you have special people and special talented, their tools and their skills in these special training environments, they're going to move fast too. So,
how has the progress in the hitting development this org has made, like, altered or affected your thinking? Just maybe in terms of, like, you know, high school players making their transitions, but also just, like, correctable flaws or, like, you know, points of development and hitters that might seem more achievable now, given, like, you know, some success you guys have had.
You know, if you're paying attention to what Ryan's talking about, it's about contact. What's the contact rate of the hitter, right? You know, what's his decisions like? How good is he at managing the strike zone? He's not chasing out of the box, right? The track man, you guys, the box prevalent to everybody who watches the game. How do they control those decisions within the box, right? And then the damage they can create. You know, our preference is that, you know, the player has two of three of those things when we're drafting him. But one, you want him to have all three. And that's the thing. Contact decisions and damage are the things we're trying to chase. The reason we keep taking shortstops, there's a reason. The reason we keep taking a catcher, there's a reason. Their defensive value is real. How the game is viewed, how industry view, not just the White Sox view, the industry view of someone wanting to acquire the players, we're very mindful of that as well.
Like everybody talks about changes in mock drafts. What prompts those changes, do you think? What new information is unveiled that allows, that makes people update these rankings?
I can't answer that question. I don't know. I think people think they know what's going on. I don't think they understand the delicacy of what orders really mean in a draft process today. These engines with science and research and development, and what TrackMan, what Hawkeye gives you today, what you can capture on a player, what's your athletic engine. You know, they get on force plates and they jump. They do these exquisite testing. We bring Major League Baseball Combine brings all this information in. I don't think the media or anybody has a website or a page they want to push. They may not have that information. I don't know how you can capture it today to justify what you think the order is, you know. So.
Mike, when the lottery happened, everyone seemed to be thinking this was an obvious number one pick draft. There was an obvious guy. Well, from your perspective, you'd seen all these guys. What were you thinking when your approach to this?
I think at the time, I don't think anybody's really under the microscope of Major League Baseball. We scout players younger, right? But you're always scouting players with one eye open when they're not on the clock. The minute the player gets on the clock and it's time to go, you know, the evaluation process gets a lot deeper. Now we open both eyes. Now we start to dig into you. Who are you? What is your makeup? What are your tools, right? What are your holes? What's the window for us to take the... Nobody's perfect. Whoever we take is not perfect, right? But it's not about what they are today. It's about what they're going to be 2 to 3 years from now when they show up here at the major league level. That's the scout's view. That's R&D's department. That's a player development inclusion as well to make sure we're doing that well.
You worked on Chalowski when he was a high school kid.
Correct. Yeah.
Have you seen a decided growth from him during his
time? A much stronger player. He's more physically advanced. He was the shortstop and the leader, the captain of the number one college team in America. He is foundational on the field with his habits. He's a leader on the field. He has a very secure defense at shortstop, so he does the things defensively you want a six-hole guy to do. And I think the power is real. He does those three pillars we talked about. He controls the zone, right? There's contact and there's damage, and he plays shortstop.
Does Emerson benefit from being coached by a guy who was a pretty accomplished major leaguer?
Yeah, Rusty Greer was a great hitter, a great player. I think anytime you're around someone at the major league level who can support you like that. I mean, Grady's an elite high school player. It's an elite high school hit tool, and he does it really easy. So obviously we're zeroing on these guys pretty good, you know. And even Vaughn Lackey, the catcher, is a supreme athlete who really could define the catch position and be, you know, foundational defensively. And he's real power, and there's a lot of traits to him that we're continuing to dig on. So,
especially with the college players, like, how important is it for you to get with that data on what they're doing? And are you able with private workouts or, you know, showcase circuit, like, get a sample size you're comfortable with, or is it something that there's still like some level of projection with because of, you know, the different environment?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Grady hit with a wood bat, you know, rock at, you know, last year Team USA, we got an up to minute. You know, we had Vaughn Lackey on campus for a workout here privately. We got a lot of data, Hawkeye information, all the science we could get on Vaughn to kind of justify who he is. So this was not – you got to be able to pull the lens back a little bit, right? So, you know, I think we feel good about that. And, you know, the bat tracking stuff's real. You know, how fast does a bat move? Colson Montgomery has elite bat speed, guys. Did I need to tell you that? I think we'd be able to capture and compare that when we bring those players on campus. So,
when you talk about maximizing draft pool beyond the first pick, have you guys narrowed in on trying to get, you know, maybe the highest upside guy at 41 versus trying to get three or four guys in those subsequent picks that utilize that extra money?
I think we're doing everything. There's a high school pitcher we love. Does that make sense? I do think that he's special. Doesn't mean we take him. I mean, it doesn't. How much does he cost? And that's the tough part today is, you know, the representation of the player They start to get more solidified with their information. So they feel if the industry value is there, the cost can either go up or down. So those moments start to come together.
Mike, you talked about the impact that high schoolers are facing. You said 95, they're seeing it. Has there been any internal conversations about the emphasis on maybe this draft in particular going after younger players with the idea that a new CBA could close that avenue off potentially?
I mean, I think you're mindful of the CBA, but we never run a draft based off of what our major league team is doing, and we never run a draft based off what the CBA is doing. You know, this team out there is a great team, and we're not picking because of what they're doing. This is a whole nother operation that we're trying to think of, and the CBA's, who knows how that's going to turn out. That's not my, that's wrong lane, wrong person. So
I think at least public side, like a lot of what they see of like the top candidates is like postseason play. Is that, you know, given the higher pressure environment, is that something you pay a lot of attention to, or is there such a, like a bigger sample of like observing of that that's maybe smaller than it seems to the public?
Well, I think the goal is to win a championship here. So I think when you're getting championship opportunities to scout them, is that, if that's what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Like with Rock, I was hoping he would get to the World Series. I want to see how he did it. Does that make sense? It's a huge upset, and he doesn't get out of the region. So you want those opportunities. We got a chance to watch Grady Emerson play in the state championship. Vaughn Lackey gets upset in the regional on a supreme Georgia Tech team. I would have loved to watch them all play till the end and see how it turned out, right? We'll just take as many views as we can get to help justify that order.
Maybe more of a later round question, but like how much – has the landscape with like NIL offers and competing with that,
oh, it's
like, stabilized at all, Earl, or
it's real,
come,
yeah,
like, more ways to handle it since it first emerged?
I mean, I've heard, I think Rock Chulowski turned down a substantial amount of money to leave UCLA last year. If you don't think the players are being offered a lot of money to leave, it's real. And there's guys taking themselves out of the draft as we speak because they're just going to run with the NIL money for one more year. So, yes, on day two, it's going to be a problem. Is it, you're ready? There's enough budget at the big programs for them to match what you offer them. So if you want to take a guy in the 12th round and give him 200 grand, the university is just going to offer him 200 grand to come back to school. The player then has a choice. Do I want to be a professional baseball player or a college baseball player? It's real. And it's difficult. I mean, it's not the best situation, but it is what it is.
You mentioned that you guys don't run your draft based on what a CBA might look like going forward. Tough question. I guess you can't get in the mind of a high schooler at this point, but do you sense that from the other way there's concern about that, that high schoolers might be facing a different landscape, have to evaluate this draft differently?
Well, I think the biggest challenge a high school player is facing, whether to sign or go to, you know, school now, is how old college baseball has gotten. Am I going to play as a freshman? How long am I going to have to wait? Where's my development at? What's the right – if my goal is to be a major leaguer, when do I want to start it? So, I mean, I think those are all real clues we're all trying to follow. But it's on each individual to make that decision. So,
county director, you never know how many times – obviously, you hope to never really pick 1-1 again, but just – how has this experience been?
Like, oh, it's been overwhelming. It's like in a positive and negative way, right? When I talk about those three candidates, right, we all thought Rock was a favorite. Hey, Grady played great. He earned his way into the mix, right? So what are you supposed to do? Rock held serve. There was a lot of tension on Rock. He actually handled it really well. And that's one thing I told him in person. I think, Rock, first off, you handled this extremely well. We met him in the combine. To put himself – the hold serve, keep himself in this mix, was really impressive to watch him go through that, right? But no, I don't want to pick 1-1 again. I want to pass this on to someone else, and I want the White Sox to win a championship here at Wilson.
Do you expect anyone else besides those three in the mix at 1-1?
No, I think those are the candidates, those, and I think we're moving in that direction. So.
Are there any ongoing conversations around the possibility of acquiring a comp pick, potentially to expand your pool a little bit?
I think Josh and Chris do a really good job, and Carlos do a great job, like continuing to sort, you know, through that information. So those things have been continued to discuss. I think the team, especially now they get their board together, they start wondering, okay, what can we possibly get about this if we think it's a deeper draft? What can we acquire for the pick in the moment? Because we can't trade picks, but you can trade it up to the point. So it is something interesting if you have an extra pick.
In the uniqueness of a 1-1, and year to year where you have three really potentially great players to pick from, but with what's going on at the big league level and through the system, what will be the defining characteristic
that makes the pick? Is it going to be talent or what you have going on here, or you just, is it strictly going to be about the player and what you guys have evaluated?
I mean, that's one thing. I give Chris a lot of credit. He's told us we're taking the best player. It's not about the major league team. It's not about the money. It's about who is the best player. You know, don't. It's a little bit out of our hands if the agencies or the representation of the player ask for a record bonus that we're not comfortable with. You know, that would be the only indication that may make us pivot a little bit what the actual costs were in your pool. But we've been focused on the best player to support the major league team. Will's done a great job. We just want to continue to support him.
Since the agency has two of them, have they indicated anything unreasonable?
The same players having the, you mean Rock and yeah. Grady having the same representation? Yeah, I mean, I think we're working hard with the group, with them as well, to figure it out, you know. And I think we'll come to the best solution. I think they'll be great partners at the end of the day. So.
And you won't tell us who it is?
I don't know who it is yet. That's the best part, is I don't know who it is yet. So, and I feel like we're going to keep working up to the moment to figure that out.
Now, that was Wednesday when White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting Mike Shirley said they don't know who it is yet. So at this point, I'm hoping they do. We are right around a half an hour away from the White Sox making the selection in the first overall pick. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Again, if you missed it earlier, breaking news. Tristan Peters, after hitting for the cycle last night, has been added to the American League All-Star roster. That's right. Tristan Peters, a former Savannah Banana. He has to be the first Savannah Banana to make an All-Star team, right? I'm trying to look it up, but I'm also trying to host a show, so I haven't been able to confirm if that is the case. But what an amazing story. Tristan Peters going to the American League, or going to the All-Star game to represent the American League on Tuesday. Just ridiculous. Sox fans, be here on Friday, August 7th, as the Sox take on the Guardians at 6:40. Then, stick around after the game for a post-game concert featuring Ja Rule, presented by Coca-Cola. Don't miss your chance for an up-close on-field experience. Exclusive on-field passes are on sale now with limited availability. So, to purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/concert. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, there is an event here at Raitt Field. Not the game, not the draft, but after the game, we have ourselves the Alumni Home Run Derby, in which Scott Podsednik will be a participant in. That is right, Scotty Pods. And so we'll let you hear from Scotty when we come back. He talked earlier this week about the Home Run Derby that will take place after the game today. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Podsednik hits one to deep right center field. Back at the wall. This ball is gone. Podsednik goes deep. His second home run of the postseason. And the White Sox win it 7-6.
One of the most memorable home runs in White Sox history. Scotty Pods, Scott Podsednik, with the home run in Game 2 of the 2005 World Series. And Scott Podsednik will be participating in today's Alumni Home Run Derby after the game here at Raitt Field between the White Sox and Athletics. Of course, the game gets underway at 1:10. Of course, also, the Major League Baseball draft officially begins at 12:30. We're expecting the White Sox to make their selection right around 12:37-ish, which we will bring for you live during our pregame coverage of White Sox baseball. So we're looking at under a half an hour away. And, of course, you heard Mike Shirley narrow it down to those three candidates, Rock Chalowski, Grady Emerson, and Von Lackey. And I will say that all of the scuttlebutt on the socials is that people are hearing, they continue to hear that the thought process is they believe that Rock is the likely choice for the White Sox. So obviously we'll know here shortly, but sounds like what most people believed was initially likely is going to probably happen here in a little under half an hour. But obviously we will find out together right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. All right, so Scotty Podsednik met with the media earlier this week, and of course, when you hear home run derby, your first thought is not necessarily Scott Podsednik. He talked about being a little bit surprised that he got the invitation.
I'm probably not one of the favorites.
No.
I probably have the least amount of home runs of anyone to ever participate in a home run derby, so I've got that going for me.
You're trying to inside the park one?
Now, that's interesting. I think if we had some sort of a derby or race around the bases, I'd be much more ready for that type of competition than hitting balls out of the ballpark. But I'm excited about it. I'm appreciative the White Sox asked me to participate. I couldn't say no. So I think it's going to be very interesting.
What was your reaction when they did ask you and you heard the words home run derby?
Well, I heard home run derby and I immediately said, okay, well, I'm going to remind you of two things. One, I was a leadoff hitter and I only have 42 career homers. Right. And two, I'm 50 years old. So I don't know how I'm going to be able to drag that bat through the zone. And then I started asking myself, and after I agreed to it, I went and looked at the career homers of Canseco. And then I started asking myself, how did I find myself in a derby with competing against someone who has 432 more homers than I have? So, but Canseco's 61, I believe. So 63.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see him swing the bat. I mean, I'm sure he still has plenty to hit the ball out of the ballpark, so it's going to be fun.
You do have arguably the most iconic home run probably in White Sox history, if not the most, one of the most iconic.
I had a whopping two that year, Merck, a whopping two. But, no, it's you know, anytime we start talking about, you know, that homer or you know, that year it happened, it just still gives me goosebumps.
Have you been in a cage recently?
I've hit three times in the cages off the tee, so I haven't had a ball thrown to me yet, so you know, I'm hoping to just provide a little bit of entertainment. To be completely honest with you, I don't know if I can get one out of the ballpark anymore or not. I really don't. I know there's going to be some adrenaline flowing, and I know the fans are going to be excited, so the Gordon and I have been kind of communicating back and forth talking about it, but I am looking forward to it, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
What do your kids think?
That's a good question. My daughter, we mentioned it to Nixon, and my daughter Petra, and Petra immediately responds, quote, "Dad, you weren't a home run hitter." That's what she says. So I start laughing. I said, "You are correct." So they know Daddy's skill set.
In Major League Home Run Derby, they pay $1 million to the winner.
Is that right?
Yes, it's right.
I didn't know that.
Is the winner going to get that much?
Well, I think bragging rights against Gordon Beckham hold more value than that at this point. But, again, I think it's just going to be a lot of fun. This is the first time the Sox have done something like this. So I really hope the fans embrace it. And I hope that us players can put on a show. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm going to put on a show, but I hope some guys can find that groove and hit some balls out of the ballpark and make it fun for the fans.
You'll be here on August 8th, also, obviously, for Ozzie's retirement. We talked a little bit about you being the one who announced it to him, but what's it going to mean to actually see the ceremony and see him get something that he's really longed for a while?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it was a very neat moment to be able to announce that news to Ozzie and the fans here. Incredibly appreciative the White Sox involved me in that, and I'm grateful and appreciative I'm going to be able to attend in August. You know, his body of work is pretty wild when you sit back and look at what Ozzie has accomplished since 1985. So well deserving. You know, I'm happy for him and his family, and really appreciative and really looking forward to that weekend.
As are we all. There's no doubt about it. Scott Podsednik, who is going to be in the house today, along with Gordon Beckham, along with Jose Canseco. Brian Anderson replaced Alexei Ramirez, who originally was scheduled to participate, but not going to be able to make it. So Brian Anderson was announced as somebody who will replace Alexi Ramirez, Daniel Palka, also Larry Garcia as well in the Alumni Home Run Derby today here at Raitt Field after the conclusion of White Sox and Athletics. Brian Hudson opening for the Sox today. The lefty will proceed Eric Fetty, who is expected to be the bulk man today. Gage Jump, the left-handed rookie on the mound for the Athletics. Jump, some good strikeout stuff and a high pick back in 2024. I make note of that because, of course, the White Sox will be making a high pick here very soon. Right around 20 minutes or so, we're expecting the White Sox to make the first overall selection in the 2026 MLB draft, which we will be bringing to you live during our pregame show right here on ESPN 1000. Sox fans, grab your friends and head to the park for Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Get one ticket, two beers, starting at $24. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. All right, in addition to the draft, which we are anxiously awaiting, we've got some big news that broke earlier today. If you missed it, I'll show that when we come back. And also, a baseball bigwig weighs in on what the White Sox might be thinking as the trade deadline approaches. We'll bring that to you next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, weekdays, 9 to noon, ESPN Chicago.
Pitches, swinging a ground ball, fair, right field corner. Benintendi scores, Peters on his way to third. Here's the throw, Charlie! He's hit for the cycle. Can you believe it?
Not really, Len. Tristan Peters. And perhaps even more unbelievable is the news that we received earlier today, less than an hour ago, 11:35 to be exact. Tristan Peters has been added to the American League All-Star roster. That's right, Tristan Peters, after hitting for the cycle, comes up and gets the honor to be a member of the All-Star team. Unbelievable. He became the seventh player in franchise history. He's just the third player since at least 1961 to collect the two hits needed to complete the cycle in the same inning. You heard the triple there. He actually homered earlier in that same inning. Unbelievable, as he joined Felix P.A. and Jim Ray Hart as the only other two to do so during the expansion era. He also became the fifth number nine hitter in Major League Baseball history to hit for the cycle. Unbelievable. And now he's a member of the American League All-Star team. Jeff Meller on White Sox Weekly. I did want to play this for you. Ken Rosenthal on Foul Territory yesterday talked about the White Sox and how aggressive they might be at the trade deadline.
I'd be surprised if payroll was an issue for them, simply because they're playing well. They want to win. Their owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, is up there in age, and I'm sure he wants to push if he can push at a reasonable level. The bigger problem or bigger restriction for them might be just their willingness to trade prospects, because like the Cardinals and like the Nationals and to a certain extent the Marlins, they're still in the process of building a sustainable contender. That's what the goal is, not just to contend this year, but long term. And I know fans get tired of hearing that a little bit when there's an opportunity to win, and that opportunity to win should never be taken for granted. But the White Sox have worked hard to get to this point, like those other clubs I mentioned, and they're not going to simply abandon that. All that said, they've got the number one pick in the draft tomorrow. They have not a glut of infielders in the minors and majors, but they have a seeming possible surplus. Given that, they do have the ability, because of the depth that they've built up, to maybe do some things at the deadline. And I expect that they will, within reason. And that means not just in a financial sense, but in a prospect sense as well.
There you go. Ken Rosenthal yesterday talking about the White Sox at the trade deadline. White Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win a 2026 suite for a game. The winner will receive a 20-person suite for a regular season White Sox home game. Host your friends and family in luxury while cheering on the Sox. To enter, Visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. That, folks, is going to wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly, but don't go anywhere. 12:30, our pregame coverage begins. We're expecting the White Sox to make the first overall selection at 12:37, which we will bring to you live right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000 on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.